And welcome to minute 111 of season 3 of Movie Rob Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1988 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me today is Mark Hoffmeyer of Movies, Films, and Flicks, the Deep Blue Sea Pod, and Con Air Pod. Welcome back to the show, Mark, for this season.
Oh, no, happy to be here. In honor of this, I put on a white tank top and I just ran through a bunch of leaves and muck and mud and dirt and grass. Got it super dirty, climbed through my air ducts. So, yeah, I'm actually recording this inside of an air duct inside my home.
Oh, that's what the reverberations are that I'm hearing in the background?
When the air conditioning comes on, it's going to get loud. I just want everyone to know. But it's winter, so it probably won't be coming on. Maybe the heat, who knows? I might be, might be a little chilly, but if you hear a lot of wind pummeling me because I'm in the air ducts recording this episode for you, Movie Rob.
Okay. Well, we know that the weather around Christmas time in Georgia is a little different than it is in LA.
Yeah. It's we got down to 35 last night, and I know a lot of Northerners right now are going, oh, yeah, that's not cold, but it's the South, y'all. It's cold.
Well,
it's,
we're recording this in October. So that's fine.
Yeah.
but in like December time, do you guys get snow at all or not?
Oh yeah, we get a couple snows a year, better than LA, like you said, with Die Hard. I mean, we get hit a couple times. Yeah, I would, I've had some good Christmases with snow. I mean, we're not talking, Iowa snow, but it's a good snowstorm for the South. I like it.
Okay, great. Yeah, that works. All right, so episode
it's more
one...
Die Hard 2 than Die Hard 1.
It's more Die Hard 2. So there's flurries in Dulles. That's what you're saying. Yeah, there's exactly. flurries in Georgia.
That's right.
Okay, right, that's fair. But Die Hard 2 was filmed in I think Denver, and then another part of it was in upstate Michigan. So yeah. It's a little colder than it is in Washington.
Ernie Harlin doesn't play. He goes on location. He'll go to the Alps or Cliffhanger. He doesn't care.
That's right. Yeah. But people will have to wait probably another year till we start talking about. Actually, it won't be a year till we start talking about Die Hard 2. But mid 2023, the plan is to start with Die Hard 2. So Mark will obviously be back to talk about Remy Harland, and stuff like that. But
snowmobile action scene. I call it right now.
All right. Well,
those are my minutes.
All right, they're yours. You have to remind me when I start pre-production, because that's season 5. Season 4 is something else that you already know what it is because you're going to be on. But our listeners don't yet know what season 4 is, so we'll finish up with season 4, and then hopefully around May, season 5 will begin. So yeah, you'll probably be. I guess the snowmobile scenes are probably like in September, October, something like that next year. So you're gonna have to wait a little while.
Minute bug. You've been bitten.
It's like the spider that bit Spider-Man. It just makes me stronger.
Have you ever fought a ballerina?
No, I have not. Have you?
The minute we're talking, no, I haven't. But the minute we're talking about, it's a pretty good ballerina. John McClane's fighting a ballerina.
That's true. It's most of this week, but we'll get there. We'll get there. Start. Hold those thoughts, Mark. We'll get there. So minute 111. Minute 111 begins with Hans listening to the radio as he reaches into his pocket, and ends with Carl using another WWF move on John. So we ended things on Friday with our good friend Thornburg, talking on TV, and we started hearing him say, your mom and dad, and then things got cut off. So today we're going to actually hear the continuation of that. We hear him on the screen from the TV saying, your mom and dad are very important people. They're very brave people. So is there something you would like to say to them if they're watching? So first of all, I love the way that they just give us the audio at the beginning, and we see Hans as, first of all, you have the whole, the thing with the lights in the back, with the light flares.
The flare.
And it just really, it looks very cool, as the whole thing is moving forward. They do a good job of focusing first on Hans and then quickly switching to Holly and then back to Hans and stuff like that. Now, my biggest question at this stage is, you can already see in Hans's face some sort of recognition here. So something is just completely off here with the, like, how can he make this connection? I mean, we're going to continue talking about it later in this minute with when he looks at the picture and stuff like that. But initially, where does this idea come from? Like, what is making Hans suspicious?
Well, did he see the photo when Bonnie Bedelia put it down? When she no, maybe she just looks like maybe the daughter look maybe Mary Elizabeth Winstead looks like
mean
Holly Gennaro.
the young Mary Elizabeth, the
Yeah,
very young
I know.
Mary
I'm a, what this
Elizabeth.
is a Live Free or Die Hard reference. Yeah, I
Yes.
mean,
No,
I
I
think.
know the reference.
I think he just kept, we need more Timothy Oliphant in this movie, by the way. No, I think that, I just think he's a sharp guy. I think he saw the daughter, maybe caught a similarity, but two and two together. I mean, you can't, I mean, Alan Rickman probably does this every day. He's just a super smart guy. That's why they cast him. So I think he just was onto it, saw the frame coming up. Maybe he saw that it was, he saw that it was down earlier, picks it back up, sees it. Oh, there we go. But I just want to say, Jan de Bont's camera work in this movie is beautiful with the
Yes,
flares.
for
I
sure.
mean, it's like meat and potatoes filmmaking. I wouldn't say there's too much. There's really no fancy shots, no Dutch angles, whatever. But there's some great rack focusing in this minute between the gun and that, and then her and him. The change of focus, the camera flares. It's just a beautiful looking movie. And I
For
think
sure.
they got pretty lucky with their location too. I mean, what a great location to shoot in, but. That's, I was immediately caught by the cinematography. As soon as you turn this on, as soon as it goes to Gruber, just the widescreen, him in frame, the camera flares, just beautiful. I feel like J.J. Abrams ripped off most of his career on these shots right here. But
Why
it
not?
just, I don't know. This movie makes me constantly happy, this scene. And just the way that he, I mean, just the way that he, I know I'm jumping ahead, and I won't jump ahead in a minute. You like your, well, you know, we'll move in order. So I won't do it, but just the like everything about his performance in this minute, he just adds this little bit of style to it. I was watching Werewolf by Night the other night, and Gael Garcia Bernal just had to do a sitting scene, but he spun twice, then sat, and it's just such and a little quirk that you get when you hire such good actors. And just watching this scene, and it's nice knowing that, you know, I watched the Movies That Made Us, the documentary on Netflix. It's nice knowing that Rickman didn't have his limp wrist when he was shooting the gun. Which was just kind of funny. So he shoots that. He shoots it very fast in the air. No, it's just a beautiful shot. And I just, what a moment. What a
No,
moment.
it's done really well. There's no question about that. But
Yeah.
again, I mean, you did jump ahead a little bit here because he doesn't look at the picture yet. That's the whole thing. My question is, what is causing him? What's causing the wheels to move in his mind that they're talking about Holly? Because again, they're saying your mother and father. Okay, it means that there is a couple there. Your mom and dad,
Yeah.
sorry. There's a couple there. Has he gone through every single person to figure out whose couple's there? I mean, it doesn't make sense from that perspective, for him to quickly, figure it out.
Oh, wait. You know what it was? Remember when she was talking to him earlier and she looked at the photo, then he looked around and looked? So he was like,
Okay.
oh, well, something's up. Something's weird. And then he saw her looking at the TV again with a look of like shock on her face. He remembered her look at the photo, then he pops it up. So remember earlier in the movie when she's eyeballing that, and he's like, what are you looking at? So I bet you when he saw her looking at the TV with the shock look on her face, he put two and two together and flipped it up and saw the picture. He remembered that from earlier and the photo on the like that was down. That's my best bet because that
Wow.
actually seems quite
Okay.
logical.
Okay.
Because
That makes sense. That definitely
if you
makes sense.
look at the other people's faces during this scene, she has the look on her face. Like she kind of does the, and then he sees it.
You
Really
mean
good
the
dolly work, by the
Roxette
way.
look?
Yeah, like the upset work. And
No, I
yeah,
said the
just,
Roxette.
oh, Roxanne. Yeah,
The
like,
look.
yeah. And so, oh gosh, she's got the look. But yeah, I think that's it. I think he just puts two and two together. And then you get a nice Jaws scene. Man, they really did a lot of dolly work in this. But yeah, I think that's it. I think he just remembered the photo. I think that's it.
Okay. All right. Later on, when we talk about the script, we'll see that in the script it's different, and there it makes more sense. But we'll get there. We'll get there.
I think that makes sense, though, right? You could put that together.
It definitely makes sense. It definitely makes sense what you're saying. Now, first of all, you know, we see that Hans then looks over to the TV as Thornburg is talking, and then we get to see the shot on the TV. So we see, you know, little Lucy, and she. What's funny is before she responds to what he says, she looks up at, I guess, Paulina, who's probably standing there, you know, for guidance or something like that. And then she says, come home, you know, in a very, you know, pleading type of way that only a child can do, I guess you can say. Now, one of the things that you probably know the answer to is, you know, and you know, we all have seen these, and I'm looking at you, and I see it also. Okay, that many microphones have foams on them, have like a foam on them. Okay,
yeah.
Do you know why? Do you know the purpose of them? Because in the shot here, Lucy, you know, when she looks up at Paulina, and then she says, "Come home." So she's talking into a microphone that has a foam on it. Now, most of us who do Movies by Minute or any other podcasts and stuff like that, so you know, most people have. Microphones that have foams on them or whatever. So do you know the purpose of having a foam? Like, what does it do?
Well, I mean, you know that this is a, like, you know, it's a windscreen. And so these people are typically on the road. A lot of TV crews, like these things are called windscreens, foam windscreens. And so I bet you they're just used to being on the road. They're used to traveling. They're news crews. They don't know what it's like in a house. They don't know if an air conditioner's on, a heater's on, whatever. So you just bring that on. It's just best practices, I think. You want to have that. You want to collect, you know, if you're, you know, it could be called a pop filter. Well, no, you put the pop filter in front of the foam. But yeah, I think you just need that for the wind. I mean, when I was on location a lot working on reality shows, you have some super wind covers that you put over this. It just blocks the wind. It filters out. You get the noise you want. There's less noise that you have to deal with later on in the edit. So I think from any news crew, they always have those. Any news crew you see, for the most part, I would say, unless they have like a super condensed microphone, there's typically a foam covering or, you know, a windscreen that protects the microphone from gusts of air that get into it, you know?
Okay, that makes sense. So I did a little bit of research and I found that there are three different reasons why people have foam, why they started putting foam on microphones. Okay, so one of them is what you said. It eliminates the sound of fans or wind that are blowing in the work area. Okay, a lot of people, you know, the sound of a fan as it blows across you and ultimately onto your headset transfers the fan sound to anyone you're talking to or you're recording so you can hear them also. It can be distracting to whoever you're recording or talking to. And it also makes a much more difficult audio experience later on when you're dealing with the editing. So that's exactly what you said. So I found two other reasons of why people use them. One of them is it improves the audio quality, okay, how you actually sound when you're talking, because there are many words that start with like the letters S or T and P. And sometimes it's hard to distinguish between them because of the way that people talk, right? So what it does is when you have this foam on the microphone, it reduces the hissing sound of your S and the popping sound of your P's. And, you know, it helps make the words come out a little better.
I mean, I make people buy pop filters sometimes for their mics when they're too heavy on the p or p or t. Like, so yeah, I definitely pop. Yeah, you got to have a pop filter windscreen that definitely cuts down the heavy p,
yeah,
which is nice.
Snap, crackle, and pop, right?
Yeah, that's right.
And then the third reason is that it actually extends the life of a microphone, okay? Because when you talk, so obviously, you know, a lot of times Mark just motioned, there's moisture that comes out. Okay, and therefore this moisture can accumulate on the microphone and will eventually, you know, cause it to, I guess wear and tear. It just won't work as well later on. And, you know, a lot of people also sometimes eat or drink while they're using a microphone. So therefore there's going to be other forms of, liquid coming out of your, out of your mouth when you're talking. You know, even small little minute ones can actually, cause problems. So people try to, So those are the three things that I found. And
if you don't have that, you need it. You need it. Like, you just do it. Buy it. Yeah. Get it.
Right, but it also depends on the type of microphone you use. I mean, I use a headset. So for me, yeah. You know, I'm just using an earpiece, and therefore I don't feel that I need it. But, you know.
I know gamers, too. Like, you know, you have the things that goes over your mouth. A lot of people don't have that as right. well, just the mic right there. But still, you do catch the – you still catch the
pop, right.
like that. Or the biggest problem with the headset is when you have a heavy breather on your podcast, you get the – you know, the – and then you go through your file, and you have to find them all. But you know, like that's fine too. I mean, it's not their fault, but I do definitely recommend that. I mean, you shoot on sets, and you know, a lot of people, when they use lavs, they can tape it to inside their shirts and they're on a studio soundstage. So you don't need really to have the foam cover because right. you would see it through the shirt. But I mean, shoot, you're on location, get it, get that foam cover. You
know, exactly.
Get all those things, like get them all, buy them, prevent for that sure. wind.
So did you notice that the TV that Hans is looking at or listening through or whatever, it's also a radio?
Oh, wow.
It has, you know, a band that shows all the radio numbers on there. And then it has a separate number for the TV stations.
I want one of those. That's like YouTube before YouTube.
I don't know if you really want one of those. That's...
I wish I had one of those.
You wish you had one of those in 1988, or you wish you had one of those now?
Now. Jam out, watch
you
some
could probably find one. You could probably find one pretty cheap. You know,
not working, probably.
That's possible.
Get the antennas going. When the Wi-Fi goes down, just mess with the antennas. You're set.
That's right. And all then the shot quickly yeah. changes between Holly and then Hans. And then back to Holly, you know, then, and you mentioned about Jan de Bont, and it's just, he does a great job here, or this is actually more the editing, but still the way that the shots go between them just really works. And at this point, Hans turns around and then looks behind him at the pictures and sees one that's lying flat down. And, you know, and he like turns really quickly to see it. It's like, you know, you see like in his mind, it just snaps. Really quickly. It's like, oh, and it quickly turns around and then checks it and then picks up the picture and notices a picture of John, which obviously wouldn't have worked had he not met John earlier. So this is another thing. We've discussed this many times over the course of this talking about Die Hard, how there's so many little elements that are building blocks in this movie. And here's another one. You know, had they not had that scene where they accidentally meet each other, you know, they wouldn't have had this.
I'm amazed at the amount of screenwriting that they were doing, writing during the production of this, that this movie's so tight.
Yes.
This, I mean, you have D'Souza, you have, you know, you have, oh, geez Louise, why did I forget the name of the director? McTiernan. You have a really talented cast, good DP. So, I mean, I know they put it together, but the fact that it's just so tight with the toes, with the socks, with the glass, I mean, just... this movie has a lot of walkie-talkie usage, though. I want to go through all the diehards and see. I think diehard movies are better. There's always a phone aspect to diehard movies, by the way.
Yes.
You have the phone lines going down in Live for Your Die Hard. You have the third one, which is all about pay phones.
Yeah. Which wouldn't work today.
No, not at all. But yeah, that's kind of fun. Like, I also, they're on open lines a lot. People are really hearing some conversations here.
Yeah, I mean, we discussed that so much in this movie. In this movie, I mean, I think that's the reason that in the second one, they decided to put a code into the CVs, you know, to make it a little more difficult for people to listen in. But these are party lines. There's no question yeah. about that.
You could be in the apartment next door, just jamming out, listening
or,
to this.
Or down in the parking lot.
Yeah, exactly.
In a limo with a bear.
I would love it. I'd love to party in that limo. Just hang out with a bear and a disco ball on the phone. It'd be a good night.
No, I know some mama bears if you're hot to try.
No, but yeah, just the way this plays out, his reaction, Bonnie Bedelia's acting. I mean, just the shots that they play in and the way they dolly in on the face, the way they like zoom right in. It's just there's some really interesting motion going on. And I mean, inside this office, there are some pretty legit floodlights, by the way. I just want to give the people floodlight props. But but you know, but I mean, just he puts his gun up in the air and I'm jumping in your way. I'll let you go.
No, that's okay. Then he quickly looks at the picture and then he looks around. And at this point, Holly figures it out that he has figured it out. And then he looks over, Hans looks over and says, Mrs. McLean, how nice to make your acquaintance. Which, again, even in this type of situation, he's still being as polite as possible, even when he's brandishing a gun. You know, now, if you look when he says that, there is a woman behind Holly who holds her hand up against her mouth.
Yeah, I see. Right? I got it paused right there.
You know, that's at second 22 where that happens.
Yep.
Now, I you know, she figures it out. This is the woman who at one point we said that this is probably Ellis's secretary. You know.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean she this woman has figured it out that Hans has figured it out. So it's just really funny just looking at the way that it is. And then
what do you need to work on their poker faces?
Yeah, seriously. Seriously. And then Hans takes a gun and shoots into the ceiling, which is really funny because, like, what is he attempting to do there besides scare them? You know, you don't usually shoot into the ceiling because you could hit something and it's going to ricochet or something like that. You know, it's not the brightest thing to do.
That's right. Shoot something, have it land on his head.
There you go. The chandelier would fall down.
That'd be amazing, Gruber.
That would be hilarious.
Lands on him and end up Gruber.
Right. And then we see like everyone flinching around there. And then he doesn't like walk out into to the mezzanine area. He like runs out, which is really funny. And he slides. Exactly. It's great. You know,
what you get with actors like this. You don't get the walk, you get the slide.
That's right. Definitely get the slide with him. And the music becomes very dramatic once again. And then he turns to Uli and says, no, first of all, he says to everybody, on your feet, everyone, to the roof. And then he turns to Uli and he says, lock them up there and come right back. Now, first of all, I find it really funny that he says, lock them up there. You know, that's a very strange comment. I mean, we know what his plan is, anyone who's seen the movie. Mm-hmm. You know, he wants to have everyone up on the, but you want to lock them up there? Like, why? You just want to get them up there.
Yeah, just get them up there and lock them. So then you can't deal with them for the rest of the night.
That's right.
Like, they're up there.
I don't know about locking. It's just very strange to, you know, get them up under the roof and then just keep them stuck on the roof. I don't know.
Get them up on the roof. Get them some soda.
Well, if it's Uli, you got to give him a few more candy bars. There you go.
Speaking of Big Trouble in Little China, he's in Big Trouble in Little China.
Yes, he is. Yes, he is. Yeah, and a few weeks ago, when Eric Deutsch was on, who was, you know, he did the minute by minute of Big Trouble in Little China, which was 5 minutes of trouble. So he was very happy to get those scenes of Uli eating candy bars.
I mean, I just wait
three days of talking about candy bars.
Oh, what a great time! I mean, I've written a lot about candy bars, so it'll be a great discussion. But no, all right, so lock them out. Like, well, get in there, lock them. I mean, I don't want to deal with these people anymore. We're moving on with our ploy. Get them out of here. Lock them up.
Exactly. And and then it looks like complete pandemonium. You know, it looks like something that would happen in an airplane. You know, and we're out of coffee. You know, like people are not all going in an orderly fashion. I mean, again, we know that there may be 30 hostages, more or less. Mm-hmm. I try counting at some point, but it's just very difficult. But when Hans runs out to grab Holly, so you see people running in every which way. You know, it's not as if they're all moving to the right or moving to the left or moving behind. There's some that are going to the right, some that are going to the left, and some behind, some forward. You know, maybe they're doing like some sort of dance step or something like that. You know,
I mean, there could be two stairwells that lead to the roof. So one's going one direction, the other one's. And also, too, Hans is so chill that when he comes sliding out of the room, doing his best disco impersonation, shooting a bullet into the ceiling.
No, then he shoots more when he comes out. Yeah. When he's sliding, he shoots. How many more times does he shoot? I think he shoots twice.
Yeah, he has two shots total. He shoots up.
Yeah, he shoots again.
He shoots up, And then he slides out of the room. Yeehaw! And then shoots up in the air. So, and then he starts pointing the gun. He throws his hand out pointing the gun. So yeah. I think people are, listen, they're freaking out. It's been a long night. You have a guy sliding out of a room, a dapper man sliding out of a room. That's pretty chill. He's shooting guns. He's pointing it. He's being kind of willy-nilly. You're going to freak out. I feel for these people. And also, he didn't really have an exact plan for them. He just kind of came out shooting. So I bet people freaked out. Correct. I think that's fair.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
Correct. And then he like walks through the crowd and grabs Holly by the arm, you know, and she looks pretty shocked, you know, that he's actually done that. Yeah.
It's a really great spin move.
Yeah. If she knew, you know, some sort of martial arts, she could have gotten out of it pretty quickly. But apparently not.
Judo throws Alan Rickman.
That would have been funny. And then the music once again gets very dramatic. And then we're on them for a few seconds, and then the shot changes. And we get snot and blood just dripping from John's nose.
I love snot and blood. Great combo.
They do it great. They do it really well. And then, you know, the rest of this minute will be fighting between Carl and John, which started last week, but it'll continue now. So Carl walks around him and kicks him, and then John squeals as he falls to the ground. And then he starts to get up, and he sees something in the corner of his eye. And then they do a great job of the focus here, where they first focus on John, and then they focus on the gun. You know, so we see what he's looking at. And then Carl walks around him again and kicks him in the face. And then John, starts getting up, and then Carl kicks him another time. And then John staggers back, and Carl then jumps into the air, as we were talking about at the beginning of this minute, of the ballerina shot. You know, jumps in the air and he kicks him in the face. You know, I mean, once again.
Bruce Willis's stunt double gets a lot of play in this scene.
Yes, for sure.
I don't think I ever noticed it until analyzed. When you do these minute by minutes, you have to find material. So you stare at the screen. I was like, wait a second. That's a different human being on that part right there. But he takes some good bumps. I mean, he was moonlighting at the time. Willis didn't have time for stunts. He didn't have time to fight a ballerina.
That's true.
Had a horrid end, which makes me very sad.
We'll get there.
Yeah, yeah. No, I'm talking about in real life.
Oh, okay. Sorry.
Yeah. Hey, what are there any like henchmen versus hero fights that you love? I put together a fun list of henchmen. So like number one henchman versus hero. I put together a fun list. Do you want to hear it?
Sure, I'd love to hear it.
All right, so in The Raid, one of my favorite all-time action films, Rama fights Mad Dog. And that is one of the most beautiful hero versus number one henchman fights. Then I have Goldeneye, where Bond fights Xenia Onatopp, played by Famke Johnson. Beautiful fight. You have Arnold versus Bennett in Commando. Let out some steam.
I didn't like that one because I don't think Bennett is a good enough, he's not on the physical same level match. As John Matrix. Sorry.
That's why I love it. That's why I love it, because it's so absurd. Like, this guy, he has no muscle, and he's wearing a chainmail vest.
Exactly.
Like, it's just a very odd, and he screams, and he's talking about cutting off balls, and it's an odd fight. I think that's why I like it, because it has character.
Okay, that's fair.
And then I like in Kill Bill when Bride fights Gogo, when, she's Oren Ishii's number one. That's a beautiful fight. And then last but not least, you have to have this Dalton versus Jimmy in Roadhouse. You got to have that rain fight right there. Beautiful rain.
That's true. Roger and Marcy will be very happy that you mentioned that.
Yeah. But I was on that show. That was fun. I had a good time.
So was
that. We talked about bouncing. But yeah, I mean, you got to drop Roadhouse. But I love a good – this is what Die Hard's so good at. The henchmen are so good. And this number one henchman is so good. I mean, he and his brother, it's very rare that Carl has a side story where his brother's killed and he wants revenge. Like, it's a whole, you've already talked about this, but it's such good motivation. And this fight, I feel like, has stakes too, because, you know, there's beef between these two guys.
Correct.
So I love that about him. Fight.
What I love about this fight, and we're going to talk about it all week, is the fact that, you know, John, he's fighting, his fighting style is street fighting, and Carl is a more professional type of fighter. You know, yep. Forget about the ballerina aspects of it, but he's trained, you know, mm-hmm. and they're still matched really well. You know, it's not as if Carl is just kicking his ass the whole time.
Well, you know, there's a lot of fighters who you got to make it ugly. You got to close the distance on Carl. Like, you can't be open for his. He has the reach on McLean and he has the kicks. And so he probably has the cardio, too. So for Bruce to win, I'm sorry, for John to win, he's got to make it ugly. Get on the stairs, get on the floor, yes, get in close combat, land the rat. Like, McLean's head is made of titanium, so he can take a lot of shots. So, yeah, I mean, but that's what he does. He makes this fight ugly. And there's more to talk about as we move on. Yeah. But I love it.
Yeah. And then the last shot of this minute is John falling backwards onto some, like, pipes or something like that, you know, as Carl lunges forward to try to get at him again.
It's a weird move. I don't think Carl would do that.
I don't think so either. I don't like it either. I mean, it's good for John, but it's not very smart from Carl's perspective, you know, to jump on him like that, which is, you know, why I mentioned, you know, at the beginning that this looks like a, you know, a WWF move, because it's not very plausible. It's not something you would expect him to do.
I think John is maybe in his head a little bit, and so he's already turned it ugly. So then Carl's fueled by anger. So I think that could work. And he's quite impulsive too, Carl, as we've seen him cut those power cables earlier. He lives on the edge, so, you know, I think that explains it.
Yeah, I think so too. All right, so you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
Jan de Bont is a beast.
Okay, you've said that already, but you can say it again. That's fine.
I don't, like, people don't, so I teach film. I teach film studies, and I teach camera and lighting. I teach how to frame shots, and a lot of people just don't understand how to frame a shot successfully, how to keep constant motion. These shots don't have to change your life. They just have to be dynamic. Use the rule of thirds, understand the lighting, understand the shot, know what it's about, know how to create tension by bringing the dolly, by dollying in, zooming in, creating the rack focus, establishing the stakes of what is around you, the photo. Like, it's all editing, it's all cinematography and direction, but the cinematography in this movie, you'll never see a shot that makes you go, oh my gosh, that's a beautiful, you know, Roger Deakins-esque shot. But it's so excellent and meat and potatoes and establishes location. So that's what it is. This scene is beautiful. Jan de Bont's a beast.
Yeah, he's great here. So the script actually has, as I teased earlier, there are some changes here. Okay, and, you know, we'll discuss whether we think that they're better for the movie that they cut them out. Or not. Okay, so first of all, it starts off with Thornburg talking on TV, where he goes, "I know you're proud of your daddy," and then they have a close up of Holly. She's speechless, watching in shock as the portable TV shows Thornburg at Holly's house. He's squatting down with his microphone to interview the children in their PJs. His voice is soft, comforting. Thornburg to the children, "Because he's a very brave policeman, and your mom has shown just as much courage. But is there something you would like to say to them if they're watching?" And then it says, John Jr. says nothing, but Lucy looks up at the camera. "Come home." So the script actually, I'm a little upset that they cut this part out, because the fact that Thornburg says your father's a brave policeman, that to me is the hint that that Hans should have gotten. And then he could have put it together that, okay, wait a second, you know, John and Holly are together. You know, I mean, I understand why they cut it, because they want to make Hans seem even more intelligent than he could be. But still, it makes sense, the fact that in the script it says, you know, your policeman father. You know, that type of, what do you think about that, Mark?
Not necessary. I think it's too on the nose. It's too much. I think it gives Gruber credit, but it's like, oh yeah, your policeman father. It's. I think it would have made this movie worse. It would have made that more obvious. That's what I think. Okay. I think.
Right, that's fair. I mean, again, it doesn't make a difference either way, because, you know, we both love the final cut, so it doesn't matter, mm-hmm. you know, what they could have done. But I just like the fact that the dialogue gives us a hint. Or gives Hans a hint as to, you know, trying to put two and two together, as opposed to just some random reason for it. You know, I mean, I like your reasoning for the fact that, okay, he remembered that Holly looked down at the picture that was facing downwards, and that was, you know, his clue.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason,
a chess match out of yes. it. There's a little bit of a chess match between them.
Yes. Yes.
Yeah.
And then it continues.
A poker game.
Yeah, for sure. Mm-hmm. And then it continues, and it says Holly struggles to stay composed. She can't. She slowly turns her head, looking at Hans. He's looking away from us at the picture of the children on her desk. He turns back and looks at her. He smiles. Mrs. McLean, how nice to make your acquaintance. So in the script, he doesn't pick up the photo. He doesn't even need to. He's figured it out.
Mm.
You know, which I think visually it's much better to see the picture. You know.
Yeah. This is tough because if this was a you wouldn't be talking about it if it was quote unquote an uneven film, but I feel like this is as near a perfect a movie as you're going to get, even with the van inside the van.
For sure.
But it's still, like, it's tough imagining something different. But I mean, from a script writing perspective, it's smart to add all of this to give them a decision later to maybe get rid of it.
Right. Okay.
But
that's fair.
Yeah.
Right. Then I'm not going to read it, but it gets. He tells both Uli and Eddie to take everyone upstairs as opposed to just one guy. Because it's sort of funny, you know, if you're watching and seeing that just one terrorist is taking all 30 plus hostages upstairs. You know, it would have been much easier for them to overpower him. I mean, these are people, these are obviously executives who are scared out of their minds. But still, you know, if someone were to get a little brave, you know, if you only have one terrorist there, it's possible to get away. So, but you know, no one ever tries here. They're all a bunch of wusses. What can I say?
They all live though, so that's smart.
Well, not because of Uli. They live because of John, who we'll get to later this week as to
but
why
Uli
they live.
Does is, I guess, if you would have sent two, it would have been easier to, like, you know, when Uli gets killed, you would have had the other henchmen up there ready to fight McLean. So then, you know, that would have added a wild card element to it.
Correct.
But that's just more storytelling you don't need. You just got to propel this movie forward.
No. It makes sense to only have Uli go there from the movie's perspective. You know, there's no question about that. Now,
from a script standpoint, though, I understand all of it. I understand why it's in the script.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
So it's good on both points. It's good. Yeah. It's good on,
Yeah. Then the script talks a little bit about the fight. It obviously is much briefer. In the script as opposed to in the movie. But McLean has another line. Okay, first of all, it says, McLean and Carl move towards each other, each sizing the other up, each looking over the terrain. McLean says, better this way, isn't it? I mean, any faggot can shoot a gun.
Oh.
This time, Carl doesn't take the bait. Then when he does charge, it's unexpected. The two men fight brutally, Carl bringing years of martial arts training to this moment. McLean bringing nothing but the street.
That's
so,
a good line.
Exactly. I like the way they do that. So
yeah.
All right.
I'm sure. I'm glad he didn't include that line.
Yeah,
that movie,
for sure. Yeah.
Oh, that would have aged like cheese left outside on a 100-degree day.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So every Monday we have a segment called Die Hard on a Monday, where my guests will give their top five Die Hard doppelganger films. So, Mark, what have you got for us? Start with number five and work your way up to number one.
All right, so I went a little different because I feel like everyone might have brought up things. So I my number five is Three Ninjas, High Noon at Mega Mountain. It's about Marianne Medusa Rogers and her henchmen infiltrate a amusement park, and they plan on taking control of the rides and using the park's guests as hostages so that the owner, Harry Jacobson, will pay $10 million to keep them safe. And it's up to, I know it's not a lone person, but you have the three ninjas who have to fight them. But the three ninjas have to fight Lothar Zog, played by Jim Varney, who's my boy, Ernest. Ernest Scared Stupid. So yeah, that's it. Three ninjas, High Noon at Mega Mountain. Same plot. They trap everybody inside on the rides. We want $10 million, or, you know, they all die. And the three ninjas have to defeat Jim Varney.
Okay. I can see that.
All right. So my number four, command performance. Dolph Lundgren, 52-year-old Dolph Lundgren. He's a member of a new metal band called CMF. And they are playing a concert. They're opening up for like a Britney Spears type performer, and the high-ranking Russian authorities are there. But then terrorists show up and kidnap the daughter and kid of this high-ranking Russian operative, and it's up to Dolph Lundgren as a drummer. He breaks a drumstick, stabs it in someone's eye. He's probably the greatest drummer on the planet, and he plays for CMF, which stands for Cheap Mother Effers. And so it's Dolph Lundgren and a Britney Spears-type lady running around killing terrorists. Dolph Lundgren directed. And I brought it up to him in Austin, Texas one time, and he shook my hand, and we had a nice conversation. So oh, wow. That's Dolph Lundgren's Die Hard, but at a concert hall.
Very
command performance. Look up the promo pictures of it. Like, he shoves the drumsticks in the back of his pants. It's really odd. Really odd. Number three. 2022 Interceptor stars Elsa Pataky. She is, for lack of, like, I don't know if you don't know her, but she's in the Fast movie. She's also the wife of Chris Hemsworth. There's two Interceptor launch sites aimed at intercepting any nuclear warhead launches. One's in Alaska, and the place is attacked by terrorists, and it's up to Elsa Pataky in a tank top, mind you, like John McClane, to defeat these terrorists.
There are a lot of Die Hard references in this movie. I saw it. It was fun. It's not a great movie, okay, but it was a fun movie to watch.
See, I think it knew exactly what it was. It's like, we are not great. We have very cheap sets, but we're gonna let Elsa. The villain was pretty good. He's another Australian actor, Luke Bracey. But it's just fun, and she got she's a excellent hero. I like the plot, and it's Die Hard inside a interceptor launch site.
Yeah,
with Elsa Pataky. Crushing folks. Number two, Firestorm, 1998. Opened up next to Titanic, got buried, but it's Howie Long, Scott Glenn, William Forsythe, and basically it's about a heroic smoke jumper who gets caught in the middle of a prison break, and he has to battle Forsythe and his henchmen during a deadly wildfire. So you
that have actually to- sounds really interesting. Wow.
Yeah, it's fun. I mean, you have Scott Glenn, you have William Forsythe, you have some good actors. But it's basically like Die Hard inside of a forest fire.
Cool.
Yeah, with a good jump kick. So that's it. And number one, it came out in 2022. It's called The Princess, and it has some good stair fights. It's with Joey King. It's about a princess who her castle is sieged by Dominic Cooper and Olga Kurylenko, and she is in the tower on her own, left up to her own devices, because she's supposed Dominic Cooper wants to marry her. But this movie's one long action scene, and Joey King did a ton of stunt choreography. It's very fun. I think it's exactly what it meant to be, and it's just a Joey King stuck inside a tower, running up and down, going through secret passageways like Die Hard, sneaking around, battling people that are tougher than she is, and it's fun. I know people aren't going to say it's the best movie ever made, but if you watch it, it's just a good time. Like Joey King puts the work in. So I feel like it's a medieval Die Hard inside of a castle.
Cool.
So that's my list.
All right. Excellent. Thank you very much for that, Mark. I know that I can always go to you to get a very diverse type of list. So that works really well.
It was tough. I was like, what am I going to talk about? I got to talk about something fun. So yeah, but I'm proud of these five movies.
You did a great job with that. All right. Do you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you, Mark?
Yeah, I don't know. Mark M. Hoffman on Twitter, Movies, Films, and Flicks, the podcast, Movies, Films, and FLIX, Deep Blue Sea, the podcast, Con Air, the podcast. Just look us up, check us out, listen to me.
All right. Cool. And finding me is very simple. Yeah. Just do a quick search for Movie Around Minute. You can find me on my website, movieroundminute.com. You can find me on Twitter, or you can find me on Facebook. All right. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay.
Yippee-ki-yay.